learning this Sefer Pelioids. It was written about 2 centuries ago by one of the great Sephardic ethicists. It's a book of ethics. And tonight we want to start with the concept called Golus. Come join us. The concept of Golus, which literally means going into exile, leaving your safe surroundings, has, according to the Pelioids, a positive element to it. And he bases himself on the Mishnah in the 4th parak of Avos. And here's how he opens up his presentation. He says, Amar Rabbi Seinu Zichrono Livracha, Hevi Gole L'makom Torah. That sometimes in your local home area, you know, neighborhood, you won't find any Torah institutions. It could happen. And therefore, what the rabbis have taught us is that we have to go into Golus, if need be, far away from our home, in order to study Torah. Now, this in contemporary life is quite popular because a lot of people send their youngsters to a far-off city, either because there are no local yeshivot or because the yeshivot elsewhere are on a superior quality, superior level. And sometimes the young men have to stay in dormitories because they can't travel back and forth on a daily basis. So one of the things I want to discuss with you tonight is this question of dormitories. Is it a good thing? Is it not a good thing? And we'll see different attitudes about sending kids away to such a place they'll have to live in a dormitory. David, you want to take one of these pages? Okay. Now, in the Pelioids, he goes on to say that a person should find himself in a makom Torah, in an atmosphere that's conducive to spiritual growth. A Jew has to be always on the move, he says, you know, always have to be growing. And therefore, heavy goal of the makom Torah, even if it means that he has to leave his surroundings, but that's what's important. He can't grow locally. And the prime example of this would be in the parasha that we read, not this past Shabbos, but the one before that, and that's what? Lech Lecha. And the famous introduction of the Rabbeinu Bachai is that Avraham Avinu could not flourish in the neighborhood where he was in Haran, and therefore Hashem said, I'm going to take you out of here and bring you to a place where you can have students and you could create a whole yeshiva and an atmosphere that's conducive for spiritual growth. The Pelioids promises us that if a person will sacrifice for the sake of Torah, leave his, you know, his comfortable surroundings, his comfort zone, as we call it, in order to be goal of the makom Torah, then muvtach lo, I promise you, shebarav talmidei chachamim, this is going to have an impact on generations to come. Your children will be Torah scholars. He goes on to say that not only will there be Torah scholars, but there will be zocher, they'll merit kisra shel Torah. Kisra shel Torah means the crown of Torah. That's the highest of all crowns. There are 3 crowns of Israel. There's keser Torah, keser kuna, keser malchus. But the highest of all 3 crowns is the keser of Torah. And he quotes Rabbi Yossi ben Kismu, says about himself, "Matanosingly call kesef v'zosha ba'olam. Give me all the silver and gold in the world, any dar el b'makom Torah. I won't take it. I won't be enticed by it. I just want to live in a makom Torah. So even if you tell me that locally I could become a billionaire, I'm willing to give that all up for the sake of going to a makom Torah, so that I can be zoche in keser Torah, so my children will be talmidei chachamim, and I'll be impacted by the atmosphere of Torah." The Pelioids goes on one step further, and this you'll see number 1 on your page. And he says, "V'lu chachmu yaskilu ha'avos va'abonim." He says that if the parents and the children will learn this lesson very well, and they'll understand how important is it to find yourself in an atmosphere of Torah, then Godel Tovas HaZocher, how immense is the reward for someone who has this merit? Sheyu Bonov B'nei Torah, that his children will be dedicated to Torah. And he says that Hayu Mochrim K'susam, if people would only be aware of the significance, the priority of living in a Makom Torah, they'd be willing to sell the shirt off their back. And Sholchim B'neim L'Makom Torah, they would send off their children to a place of Torah, Afil L'Sofa Olam, even on the other side of the world. Now, what would you say, according to the Pel Yoetz, is this youngster that you're sending to the other side of the world going to come home on a daily basis? Obviously not. Even with the light trains and the fast trains, he can't go from Sofa Olam to Sofa Olam on a daily basis. I remember when I first started high school, I was living in a location where in order to get to yeshiva on a daily basis, it took me an hour and a half and sometimes longer. And I was worn out. After the first 3 months in high school, I said to my father, "Dad, I can't. It's too much for me. 3 hours of traveling for a 14-year-old boy on a daily basis." So my father fought to get me a dormitory room. And it would seem from the Pel Yoetz, the impression you get is that he's in favor of sending off boys to dormitories, even if it means that the boy will be living not in his home environment. But if the yeshiva is so far away, that's the Makom Torah, it could be so far along, and that's what we have to do. What I'd like to study with you tonight, and I find this very exciting, I hope you'll enjoy it as we go along, is a sefer called Divrei Siach. Now, what is this sefer Divrei Siach? This is a record of Siach. Siach means discussions or dialogue. Between a questioner who raised the question and Reb Chaim Kinevsky. And in one of the sections of this book, the questions that were fired at Reb Chaim Kinevsky, and he was meant to answer them on the spot, it was like a question and answer period, but it was recorded in this Sefer Divrei Siach, is about chinuch, is about how to raise children, how to educate children. And here Reb Chaim says the following. Somebody asked me the question. He's koveya itim l'Torah. He designates special times, set times for the study of Torah. Aval rov's mind, but most of his time, he has to dedicate to his profession, to making a living. Now he has two choices. His first choice, one choice is to go study in a Beis HaMedrash. Leave his house, let's say he has an hour at night, and study in a place where there's dibuk chaverim, where there are many other people studying, where he can ask questions to others and get guidance. And there's a special element and a special extra significance to learning in a Beis Medrash. Beis Medrash is a place which is dedicated for the public, for the whole Jewish community to study. And the Gemara in Yerushalmi mentions that it's a great milah, there's something special about learning in a Beis Medrash. And this is all brought down in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch. However, what's the drawback? What's the downside? He says that his children will not see their father learning. He could study therefore at home. On one level, his learning perhaps qualitatively will suffer. But on the other hand, for the sake of educating his children, that they should see their father learning, that's a big plus. So let's just summarize. We're up to here. So let's just summarize the pluses and the minuses to this decision. The plus is that if he stays home, he will be a living example for his children to see how he dedicates himself after a hard day of work to Torah study. The drawback, though, in staying home is that he misses out on the unique enhancement or positive benefits of learning in a Beis Medrash. And the positive elements of learning in a Beis Medrash are manifold. On the one hand, there's a metaphysical element that one should be surrounded by an atmosphere of Torah. there's a simple understanding that there's dibuk haver and there are people to talk to. You can have chavrusa learning going on. You can get guidance from the rebbeim. It's happening. It's a happening place, the Beis Medrash. But again, the drawback is his children will not see him learn. How important is it for him, the father, to be a living example on every single evening, every moment that he's learning, for his children to see?
Can he take a selfie of himself in the Beis Medrash?
Can he what?
Take a selfie?
I don't know if a selfie will help. You know, the idea is that his child should see him learning, you know. So Reb Chaim Konevsky says that when this question came up in front of him, so the one who asked the question said, Chayecha Kodmin. You know, it's very nice to educate your children. And that's a very important mitzvah that a father has to have. But on the other hand, Chayecha Kodmin, your life comes first. And if your life comes first, then you have to make your decision based on what's best for you in terms of the quality of your learning. And if going out of the house at night into the Beis Medrash is best, that's what you should do. So Reb Chaim responded and he said the following. Gam ze chayecha. He says that what's at stake here is chayecha on both counts. You know, whether you go to the Beis Medrash or you learn at home. Why? He says, "V'chizel lo chayim shelo sheiladim v'babayis yiru v'yischanchu sha'aba lo b'torah kovei itim l'torah." He says, "Is it not chayecha? Is it not part of his very life that his children should be educated? Are they something separate from himself? If his children will see that he's learning, that he's dedicating time, even in a very busy and taxing day, to the study of Torah, that's also chayecha." That's also his own life. V'kama hefseh yesh im heim lo yiru. And look what he's going to lose. How much is he going to give up if they don't see him learning? Hine gam ze chayecha. And therefore, since it's chayecha on both ends, Reb Chaim tips the scale in favor of learning at home. I just would add the following comment. You know, sometimes learning at home can be a great thing. You know, your children see and they watch and they get excited about you learning at home. But if it gets to the point where there are too many distractions, where it absolutely undermines your learning, you know, this is going on and this is going on, and all these different things that are blasting out and people coming in and interrupting him. At the end, he can't get anything accomplished. He's not able to concentrate on his learning. I don't think that's the case that Reb Chaim is addressing. Again, the quality of his learning will go down, will certainly suffer because he's not in a basement. He doesn't have dibuk haver. He doesn't have that special element of the atmosphere of the basement, which upgrades his Torah learning. But on the other hand, it's critical for him to become a living example for his children. Now we go on to question number two. A father of both boys and girls takes his son to the Beis Medrash. Now his son gets to see the father learning plus everyone else learning, and the quality of his learning is upgraded. The only problem is his daughter doesn't see him learning. Aval b'nosav lo ro'os sha'aval lomed. How important is it that he should stay home, learn at home, even though he has the option of taking his male children over to the Beis Medrash and upgrading the quality of his learning, just so that his daughter sees him learn? Says Reb Chaim Konevsky, Gam b'nosav, tzrichos liros avolomed. Don't downgrade the significance of the girls seeing their father learning. Why? Because heim yigdalu, when they get older, ubaleim, and they get married, ubreim, and their sons, you, B'nai Torah, they will also want to be dedicated to the Torah. And therefore, she must appreciate the Torah. She must be elevated and impacted by what she sees. And therefore, even the girls have to see their father learning. So imagine, Reb Chaim Konevsky is tipping the scale in favor of learning at home against all odds. Number one, he, the father, by learning at home, will be forfeiting a chunk of the quality of his learning, an element of the quality of his learning. Number two, as far as his male children are concerned, he can certainly take them along to the Beis Medrash. But no, says Reb Chaim, for the sake and the significance of his daughter's seeing that I'm learning, he should learn at home. Now he goes on to question number three. A man comes to him and he tells him, Rebbe, my son has no desire to learn. He doesn't want to learn. So Reb Chaim says he should go visit someone by the name of Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum. Now this Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum apparently is no longer alive, and that's why it says Zatzal. And Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum was at that time the expert in dealing with children who were turned off, as we say. They didn't have any excitement, any flame, any burning desire to learn. So Reb Chaim tells the following story. He meets the father who had approached him, Reb Chaim, and he asks him, did that meeting with Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum have any impact on the child? Unally, so he responded to me and he says the following. He says, Dibarti ito shatayim, aval al dover echad, lo hayali pitaron hagun, hayelet amar abba sholech oti lilmod, uma hu ose harehu lo lomed. In other words, what Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum was able to do is he was able to talk to the young man and try to get him excited, but he was up against the brick wall. What was the barrier? What was holding back this child from being influenced? And the answer is that the child said, I don't see my father learning. My father sends me to learn, but he himself reads newspapers, he watches television, whatever he does with his time. And when the son said this, Rabbi Akiva Tannenbaum said, I have nothing to say. I can't say anything more. So once again, we see over and over again in these answers that Reb Chaim is giving how significant it is for the father to serve as an example for his son. You know, we live in a generation where in many circles, the parents will send off their children to the most intense learning programs. But they themselves are not interested in learning. You know, they want to say, well, my son goes to the top yeshiva. But what do they do for learning? They waste their time. They have a great, you know, great thing going on, and they go on vacations and so forth, and they expect their child to, as we say in Yiddish, vaksa yisit tabul chochem. He's supposed to grow into this great scout. But the children are not there necessarily. They're not, their heart is not in it, because they don't see the father learn. It's very hard to inspire a child to an ideal if the father himself doesn't live up to the ideal. Because it becomes a contradiction, a conflict. It's like a falsification of the truth. You know, you're telling me I should kill myself for learning, Dad, but what do you do for learning? Nothing. Next question. We're on the bottom right of the first column. A Jew comes in and asks the following question. What can I do in order to educate my children, my sons and my daughters, to give them a strong basis in Yirat Shamayim, the fear of heaven? And the answer of Chaim is, it all depends on the quality of the Yirat Shamayim that they see in the parents. The parents have to set the tone. So if you want to give strength to your children, if you want them to upgrade their level of Yirat Shamayim, then you have to work on yourself first. Because it's only going to work if you set the tone. What should a father and mother do so that their children should go on the right path? And the answer is they should see an example from their father who's on the right path. He's a Talmud Chacham. He dedicates himself to Torah study. And here we're on the top of the middle column. Talmud Chacham asks for a bracha on behalf of his son. Reb Chaim, give me a bracha for my son, that he should have a desire to learn. So Reb Chaim puts his hand on top of the child's head, and he says to him, Gam avicha bikesh osa bracha bishvilcha. In other words, what Reb Chaim was saying was that first I have to give a bracha to the father. And then, if the father wants a bracha, that he should learn, now I can give a bracha to the son, and I can say, you know what, I'm going to give you this bracha because your father also wanted the same bracha. Once again, to convey the message to the child that his father also has a tremendous desire and aspiration to grow. Everything's about growth. Somebody asks Reb Chaim, where does tefillah, where does prayer fit into the equation? Isn't it absolutely critical to daven, to pray, to present a supplication to God that your children should grow to be scholars, should be Yirei Shamayim, that they should move on and on to higher levels? So Reb Chaim said the following. He said, tefillah is absolutely critical. Whatever I tell you and whatever guidance I can give you, don't think for one moment that that replaces the obligation to pray. Prayer holds the key. Al yiladim, when it comes to children, yesh l'spal harbe. You have to daven and daven and daven. That's your first responsibility. Somebody came to Reb Chaim and he said to him, I have problems with two of my children, two of my sons. What should I do? So Reb Chaim says, daven. He says to Reb Chaim, but me and my wife are davening all the time. Says Reb Chaim, for children, you have to keep davening more and more and more. Somebody goes into Reb Chaim with a spiritual problem with his child. His child is not up to par, so to speak. So Reb Chaim says to him, you got to daven. And the questioner who got this answer, you have to daven, he says to him, but tefillah also mechza. You know, tefillah can do half. I got to do my half. So Reb Chaim answered him with a very surprising answer. He says, in our time, it's so difficult with our children to raise them. The influences out there are so negative that even if you'll get mechza because your tefillah will accomplish halfway, that's a great deal. Halavai, we can only wish that you get halfway. Then somebody asked Reb Chaim, what about sending my son to a dormitory? He's going to learn out of town. He's got to stay in the dormitory. Reb Chaim says, no deal. I'm absolutely opposed to dormitories.
Why?
He doesn't tell you why. I can only guess. Apparently the influence of dormitories is very, very tricky, very iffy, very dangerous. Anything could go on in a dormitory. Now some dormitories are more seriously supervised than others. But nevertheless, even in the most supervised of dormitories, you can't lock down a child. And things go on in dormitories. Reb Chaim was not in favor of dormitories.
Emphasis on the home. You see, he's a 100% of the home.
Correct. If the home is strong, that's where the child should be. Again, he's not talking about 18-year-olds. He's talking about young children. David? Maybe we could just close this door.
You said before the child goes away, out of town, he's even at the end of the earth. So yeah, he has to be in the dormitory. He has to be in someone's house. He can't live in his parents' house. He said,
correct. So there's machlokas here between the Pelioids and Reb Chaim Kanevsky. But the answer is the Pelioids lived 2 centuries ago.
Right.
For example, even in my father's time, which is less than a century ago, I'm talking about when he was growing up. I mean, if my father were alive, he'd be more than a century old. And when he was growing up, it was common to go out of town. There was a certain strength to the yeshiva atmosphere because the entire life was so different. I'm not saying there weren't maskilim and there weren't apikorsim and all that, but amongst the religious community, it was amazingly strong. But today, Reb Chaim is saying, even in the most religious circles, it's a dangerous business. Dormitories are very dangerous. Now, he says that in America, there are 2 months of summer vacation when the children are sent to summer camps. And in the summer camps, there's only a possibility of a dormitory for hundreds of children who come to take part in the summer program. So Reb Chaim was asked a question about a boy who's 15 years old. Everyone is going to the summer camp. Are you telling me that I shouldn't send my son to a summer camp? All his friends are going. So Rav Chaim said the following. Send your son to the summer camp. But make sure that somebody's looking after him. Now, he doesn't go into detail, but I suspect that what he means is that you may have to pay some extra money to ask either a counselor or perhaps one of the directors of the camp or maybe one of the older boys in the camp who's more serious and established, more mature. Pay him an extra salary to take an interest in your son, to look after your son. Again, it becomes very tricky because let's say you pay someone to watch your son. Is your son aware of that? You know, does he know he's being tailgated? He's under surveillance. If he does, he might rebel. He's going to be very resentful of the fact that his father is paying someone to sort of sleep snoop on him. He wants his freedom. He went away from his summer camp. So all the details here are not ironed out. But the fundamental principle of Reb Chaim is if you have to send him to the camp because otherwise the kid is going to feel left out, all his friends are going to summer camp, then make sure there's some extra supervision, special attention, because the dormitory is very is very dangerous. A Jew comes in to ask Reb Chaim, my son is excellent and he seems to be miyua, I don't know how to translate that word, he's destined for greatness. And he got an Eitzah, he was by one of the rabbis who advised him that he should sleep at home. But now there's a new situation. And now the parents know exactly who his friends are. They're good friends. They're a good influence on him. And the boy himself wants to sleep in the dormitory. It takes him a long time to go back and forth to school from house, from his home. That's what I was talking about myself. And he wants to dedicate himself totally to the yeshiva program without any interruption. So again, look at the facts on the ground. Number one, this child is potentially one of the future gadols in Israel. Number two, his friends are on a very high level, positive influence. Number three, he only wants to sleep in the dorm because he wants to cut out and reduce all the bittles man that'll take him out of learning, traveling through in both directions. What do you anticipate Reb Chaim's answer is going to be? Send him to the door. No. Reb Chaim says, "Ein apetrof slarais." If you can find a yeshiva that's local, and he doesn't have to live in the dorm, that's what you should do. Even if he has the best friends, ein apetrof slarais. Does anybody know what that phrase means? You know, you lock yourself up in a room with a woman. You can be the gadol hador, but you can't control yourself in that situation. So a dormitory is so tempting, all sorts of things. I don't know what he has in mind. In other words, I don't know what the boys are doing, if they're rebelling, and they're not, you know, either they're bottling or they're smoking, or I don't know if the lady's involved, I don't know if they're drugs, I don't know what they're doing. But there's so many destructive enticements that ain't up in Trump's law rights. No one could be above the law here. You know, Shlomo HaMelech married 1,000 women thinking that he's above the law. But it didn't work. Lachain, im chayv lulmod chutz le'ir, if he has to go and learn outside the city, ein brera, then you have no choice. You couldn't find the yeshiva locally, that's what you have to do. Send him to the dorm, he has good chaverim, good influence. Zavol be'ir. However, if he can find a yeshiva locally, ain't Eitzah. There's no ways out here. No. Yeshayin Babais. Let him live at home.
Talking about Eitzah, basically.
For sure. All these questions are asked in Bnei Brak, the holy city of Bnei Brak. And Reb Chaim was we'll soon see another opinion, but Reb Chaim's opinion was, maybe he heard too many stories. I don't know. This part I can't fill in. You know, every posek has to respond based on what he thinks is the truth. And that's the sum total of all his experiences in life. But the bottom line is, Reb Chaim, and this is very fascinating to me, was opposed to the dormitories. You know, a lot of parents ask, why did my son go off the derech? Parents are crying about this. You know, we're losing. And in the most religious circles, this is not something that's only in modern Orthodox circles, all over the place. There are young boys that are just, they're not interested, and they it gets worse and worse. In some cases, the influence in the army, in the Israeli army, is very difficult. You know, you really have to be very strong. I had a student when I taught Shalvim, he came to me and he said that his non-religious friends are pressuring him to come to the Friday night dances that they have. Because that's the big night in the army, when the boys and girls have fun, and they're allowed to, you know, sort of break away from the very heavy discipline and that atmosphere. And he told me that it's very difficult. They look at him like he's crazy, you know, because he's religious and they're not. And he doesn't want to participate in these parties on Shabbos. But the pressure is mounting. I didn't know what to tell him. I just tried to give him a chizuk and said, you know, try to do the best you can. You know, your future is at stake over here. If you can switch into a more religious pluga, you know, the battalion, that's what you should do. But if you're stuck here... But my heart went out for him. And in dormitories, you know, there could be peer pressure, even from good boys. But sometimes, you know, they're influenced by this, that, and the other thing. The street has an influence. And, you know, it's very difficult. You know, I was a Rosh Hashiva in a yeshiva where I remember one of the best boys got caught watching movies. And what he told us, he had this little, this is Mamish 15 years ago, 10 years ago. He had a contraption, I don't know what you call it, a recorder, that was literally this size. You know, you could fit it into the palm of your hand. He told me he had 35 movies on this. And he told me also, because he's a very honest fellow, that there's certain movies that he watched over and over and over again. That what that meant was, and this is one of the best boys in the yeshiva, you can imagine what, there are plenty of guys lower than him, can imagine how much sleep he was getting at night. And if you're not sleeping at night, you're sleeping during the day, during classes. Not only that, the movies are penetrating into your heart and soul, and this is what goes on. So when he was at home with his parents, at least his parents knew what was going on. You know, how they dealt with the situation, I don't know. That's not easy either. But at least there's some awareness of what's going on. Once the kid is in a dormitory with a bunch of 18-year-old boys, 6,000 miles away from home, and it's only by fluke that we got to know about this. And when he was sitting in my office telling me about this little contraption, he mentioned to me, Rabbi, there are much more sophisticated contraptions in the yeshiva that you don't know about. He didn't want to snitch on anybody, but... So that was Reb Chaim's perspective. You know, if you wanted to send your kid to a dormitory, don't ask Reb Chaim Konevsky. You're not going to get a lot of encouragement from him. But what I want to study with you are two tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer lived 150 years ago. And we're going to connect these tshuvas to the Peleoites. The Peleoites, which you'll see on the bottom of the middle column, says, Omer Rabbi Hussein is called very goal of Makom Torah. We quoted this before. The Hein Emes, how true it is, and how significant it is to go to the other end of the world to be in this Torah environment. Vehein bechlal, sharotza liskos lekisra shel Torah, if he wants to merit the crown of Torah, ve'emotzim him komim milulot, he can't find anyone locally to teach him, yishlachenu aviv, his father should send him, or yelich lo le'ir shel chachamim, or maybe he himself should resettle in a city made up of scholars, v'shel sofrim, lilmot Torah. Again, just to summarize, the emphasis here is, if need be, going to Golis, go into exile, leave your home for the sake of a proper Torah environment. Take a look at the Chassam Sofer number 7, and this is a drush of the Chassam Sofer for Parsha Shmos. And he says the following, Anu roim bimei olam, what we've seen throughout the generations, Vishanim Kadmonius, and even in early years, Shenimtza Ikar HaTorah, where do we find the scholars of Torah amongst the young fellows? Where are the future Gedolim who are now climbing up the ranks? You know where you find them? They're amongst the group of Talmidim that study Chutz LeBeis Avosav. The Chassam Sofer is saying the exact opposite of what we saw in Reb Chaim Konevsky. Reb Chaim Konevsky says, keep the boys at home and protect them from the influence of the outside dormitory. The Chassam Sofer is saying that those who stayed at home did not climb the spiritual ladder. You want to know where the Ikar Torah is? You'll find it amongst the Talmidim that left their home. Mahalchim Begola, they go far away from their home. And they're supported in a land that's Eretz Lolahem, that's not their local land. The more foreign you are, the less connected you are to that society, and the less you're exposed to the distractions, and they're not alluring to you. And he says that some sort of afilu dimei anivim, I can prove to you that even back in the time of the prophets, they were sent very far away from their homes to study and prepare to be prophets. V'ra'inu bnei anivim hayu mitzapim ad shehayu mevim lehem tzarcham. The pasuk in Tanakh indicates that they had to bring, the Jewish community had to bring food to far off places, that to ship food in order to supply food for the Bnei Anavim. Bnei Anavim is a term for those who were studying stage, so to speak. You know, they were in training to become prophets. Shmami, know what we see from this over and over again. Ki hoya, kein hoya dar kami olam. This was the way of the Jewish folk all the way throughout, back into the beginning of the dawn of Jewish history. Where you find Torah that it exists, it's alive and it's strong, it's in the Bnei Yeshiva, who are sent far away from their homes. Hashem Yishmarem, God should protect them, because every day they depend upon others to help them live. Have you ever heard of word kest? I'm not sure if it's Yiddish or if it's Polish. I don't know. It's probably a Polish word that was adopted into Yiddish. Kest would mean that somebody would support you while you were learning. They would take care of all your financial and physical needs, and they would therefore get a merit in Shemayim from your Torah. And he says that those people who went out there and they were dependent upon others who supported them, but they were far away from their homes, they had the greatest cheshek, the greatest intense desire to climb the ladder and steigen and become great scholars. Hare ha'olam chashach ba'adam. He says that even though life for them was quite challenging, it was very difficult, and you still could, today you could meet one or two old timers who fit into this, in this generation where it was very, very challenging for them to go far away from their homes to learn and depend upon others to support them. But as a result of that sacrifice of living in that darkness, they came out of the darkness into the greatest light. Ki bahem meir ora Torah. In other words, if you start with darkness and you face adversity and you have challenges that you overcome in that bleak situation, that's when you become the Ara Torah. You become one with the light of Torah. Let's take a look at another tshuva of Chassam Sofer. This is in Kol Shei Mishpat. Again, the same idea. He says, Minag Nachon, it's a good custom, laharchik, to send the boys far away, chutz l'medina, outside the parameters of the state, of the country you're in, kidei l'lomod Torah, for the sake of Torah learning. And he talks about a wealthy person that before his death, he designated a certain sum of money that the dividends, the profits from that money, that's called the peros. The payrolls, right, the dividends of this money, let's say you put it in a bank account, and the interest that was earned would be given to a certain selected young man, like this was a special fellow, Yonik V'chacham, right, he's a bright budding scholar who's really cut out for learning and ultimately for teaching. And he's dedicated to the observance of mitzvahs. Down the line, he's going to become a posek. He's going to be able to rule in halachic issues. How old was this young boy that was, so to speak, adopted by this wealthy person who took upon himself to support the boy, he was less than 10 years old. Could you imagine? He's a young boy, and yet his prowess and his potential was clear to everyone. Now, if you take on such a thing, because you have the financial wherewithal to do so and support a young man, then grab him while he's young, says the Tzam Sofer, when he has a bright future and a long future in front of him. Not if he reached the age of 15. Catch him before he's 15. Lo, for such a person who has so much potential, yutnu siyua, give him on an annual basis 200 gold coins. I don't know exactly how much that would be in our currency. Until he reaches the age of 25. So imagine, you're supporting this young man for at least a minimum of 10 years. And then you should add a contractual condition. And that is, and repeat this condition over and over again, that he should go far away from his house. He should learn in a yeshiva that's outside the parameters of his local country. And that's where he'll succeed. Far away from home. And he says that there should be a pay the rabba ego. We should be very careful about this demand. And if we do this, yafa atza, this is a good thing. Shetziva sheyetze dafka lulmol chutz l'medina. Why? Because there are too many distractions here locally. And he writes the Tzam Sofer, minhag avoseinu v'avoseinu hakadmonim. This was the way of life of our forefathers and our rabbis that go all the way back to the ancient times. They went far away from their home. Far and far away. This is where we have to underline it, because this is the punchline of the Tzam Sofer, that when you study Torah far away from your house, that's going to be a superior quality. And even though it means that physically you're going to have hardships and you're going to have difficulties and challenges, but eino ma'unod, he's not, you know, if you give him all the good things in life and you pamper him with all the good food and all the good, you know, the air conditioning and heating and baths and whatnot, then without that element of working for the Torah and overcoming these difficulties, we're not going to see so much benefit, so much success down the line. Why? Because if he's eino Me'uno, then Odiv. He's mitztayr k'tzas. He has a little bit of challenge, you know, physically and so forth. But Amru Chazal say, Af chachma amda li, chachma shalamadati ba'af, hisha amda li. Af means with difficulty, with challenges. That's the chachma that I achieved. That's what I remember. Like, for example, I always was shocked. You meet European Jews. Again, today it's a little more rare, but in my youth, and my father amongst them. And they remember things that happened in their youth. They remember the Torah they studied. And in America, most of us forgot what we learned yesterday. And according to some Sofer's thesis, the answer to that question is because in Europe, they didn't have all the wealth and the affluence. They suffered to learn. It was Chachma Shalamadati Ba'af, with suffering. And that's what remains in a person. When you work hard and you toil with a lot of amelus and you overcome all sorts of barriers and difficulties, that's what sticks with you. That's what goes into your bloodstream, and you can't forget it. He says, Afilu Rabbeinu HaKadosh, even Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Asher Kol Yisrael Ishkimu L'Pischo, that all of Israel came to knock on his door to try to get an answer. And there were many, you know, groups of students that were learning together with Rebbe, and he quotes a Gemara to prove this. Nevertheless, he pasak Reb Shimon Brei, Reb Shimon Ben Reb Yehuda, meaning the Tana Reb Shimon, who was the son of Rebbe. His father said that I'm going to send you lemezel lebei Rav Tresar Shani. Go and study in the house of Rav for 12 years, going to Golos for 12 years. Even though Rebbe was a good environment, there were many scholars who used to flock and gravitate to Rebbe. And not only that, Even if it's in Eretz Yisrael, says the Chassam Sofer, you would send the student to Chutz Laretz. Nidado, which means to go into Golus, Lilmot Torah. Wow. Imagine, like for example, in the Haredi world, the top yeshiva, the most popular yeshiva in Chutz Laretz is what? Everybody knows this? Lakewood. It's Lakewood Yeshiva. So imagine you have a bacher, an Israeli bacher, who's learning yeshiva here, and his parents will send him to Lakewood. And the Chassam Sofer says it's a good idea, because if he leaves his home environment and he faces the challenges of being in a foreign country, although it's not so difficult to live in Lakewood, there are plenty of Dunkin' Donuts over there, whatever they have. But nevertheless, it's far away from the home. The Afal Gav Shahoyisham Beretz Yeshivos. At the time of Rebbe, there were plenty of yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, but still, he sent his own son to learn in Bavel by at the feet of Rav. There was always a rotation system, and the students would get their option, get their chance at going abroad to study Torah. Some went here and some went there, and the pasuk says, "V'heim tukur aglecha yisa midavro secha." Tukur aglecha means they go far away to study Torah. So he says the following, Ayotzi Mikol said, the bottom line of this discussion is, Yesh latzeis lilmot Torah, you should leave your local domicile for the sake of Torah study, afilu kisha'av gon, even if your father is a great genius, v'rav guvrei v'yeshiva b'beiso, kimo reben yakadosh, or for example, Yitzchak Avinu and Yaakov went out to study for 14 years in the Beis Shem Va'ever, why didn't he keep Yaakov home? The answer is there's something challenging yet that breaks a person into Torah when he's far away from home in a difficult, challenging environment. The Afal Pi Shalom V'Shimesh Yitzchak Avinu, Yitzchak Av Avinu, Yaakov was certainly very impacted by his father Yitzchak, and he learned Torah by Yitzchak, but nevertheless, he had to get sent out by Yitzchak all the way to Shem V'Ever. Because that's the way we succeed in Torah mitzvahs. Now, if just one more sentence, and then the floor is yours. If we have to compare and contrast Reb Chaim Konevsky with the Chassam Sofer, you could always say the following: Reb Chaim Konevsky is talking in the year 2010 or 2018 or whatever it is. The Chassam Sofer is talking in the year 1850. So maybe the Chassam Sofer's reality is a lot different than the reality of Reb Chaim Konevsky. Maybe if the Chassam Sofer lived today, he also would be very, very skeptical about sending a kid to a dormitory with all the influences today. But at the time of the Chassam Sofer, the possibility of going off to yeshiva and steiging and being impacted and being uplifted by the yeshiva, which is far away from home, where the child has to face the challenges and he has to build himself up from scratch and mature in that environment, the benefits outweigh any of the drawbacks. Yeah, Larry.
I just think that the idea that sometimes the different Rebbe has a different perspective, and when you broaden your perspective, you could broaden.
Correct. It's very nice that you have a father who's a genius and he's Rebbe and so on, but expose yourself to other Rebbeim. Okay, now we move on. If you turn the page to the flip side, you should see, let me just see if it says the word Gadir on it. Sorry. It does have Gadir on it? Yeah. Geder or Gadir is, again, we're going through the Gimels now in the Peleoids, is a fence. Why is the Peleoids dedicated an entire chapter to fences? So he says, "Fartzivu aleinu anshei knesset hagedola." The Mishnah at the beginning of Avos, "Asus yog la Torah." Set up a fence around the Torah to protect the Torah. "Vizos toras ha'adam, toras kol echad biyado ligdar gadol liatzma." He quotes the pasuk "Zos toras ha'adam," which means that every person is unique, is an individual. And everyone should take advantage and live up to this responsibility to ligdar gadol liatzmo, to create a fence for himself. Lefi mashu tzar. In other words, a person, as Socrates would say, know thyself. That's the first rule. And if you know yourself, then you know where you can draw the line. And if you're honest with yourself, you'll set up gedarim. and you'll decide where to go and when to go, when to eat, when not to eat, who to hang around with, and you'll set up these gedarim. So, for example, I mean, just a common, you know, down to earth example. You have two ways of walking towards a certain destination, and one is shorter than the other. But unfortunately, the shorter way will expose you to certain temptations for whatever reason. So you're going to go down the longer way. You'll get some extra exercise because you've set up a fence for yourself to such an extent that you hardly even look in that direction. You know, it's been literally fenced off as far as you're concerned. It's like you're walking by a building site and you see it's fenced off. You wouldn't even dream going in there because you know that they're working there and who knows what dangers lurk. So we want to look at a sefer now, which is called Rabbi Nosson Gishtentner, Lahoris Nosson, which is a commentary on Avos. And this is the very first piece in his work on the very first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. By the way, how many books have been written on Pirkei Avos?
2,000.
I can't even begin to count them. You would fill up three times these shelves of libraries on books on Pirkei Avos. It's just endless. And they keep coming out with new ones in every single language. The Masifta, if you're familiar with, came out now with, I think it's 8 volumes on Pirkei Avos. 8 volumes on Pirkei Avos. It's amazing. So Lahoris Nosson says the following. What does it mean, Asus Yagla Torah? He has a new twist, a totally original take on what it means, Asu Siyag LaTorah. Siyag, he says, means something kavua, something that's set in its place. That's the meaning and the significance of a wall or a fence. And Asu Siyag LaTorah means set up something kavua with regard to Torah. It is so kavua, it's so set, that all the winds in the world can't blow it down. So imagine a person is learning, a person is teaching, and he has a kfirus, and it's a set time that he's designated because he was mekayim, what it says here in the Lord's, asus yag, latar siyag means a kfirus, something that's definite. And a secretary comes in with an emergency phone call. Could be thousands of dollars, if not tens of thousands of dollars, are at the line, on the stake over here. Don't take the phone call. Amazing. No one should bother him. Shum tirda. Any sort of critical. Again, I don't think he's entering into issues like kibud av v'em. You know, that's a different story. Because if a great mitzvah comes along, then you have to terminate your learning for the sake of a mitzvah. So if your father needs you, your mother needs you, whatever. But if you're talking about a tirda, you know, some sort of issue that comes up that doesn't fall under Kibud Av V'Em, it's Mitirdas Hazman, he says, it has to do with the passage of time, meaning it's here today and gone tomorrow. Is Tzorach Lasos Gader V'Siyad Kimas Merim Netuim? It's got to be like you knock it into the ground with very strong nails, he says, that nothing can wave it, nothing can blow it, nothing can cause it to sway. Zman limudu akavu, if he designates his time period for learning, lo yisbatal yidei shum tirda shavola. And the Gemara tells in Shabbos that the first question they're going to ask us when we get up to the pearly gates is kavata itim la Torah. Says Rashi, there in Masechta Shabbos, Laman Aleph, lefisha ha'odom, odom tzorach l'asik b'derech eretz, the person has to be involved in an occupation, in bringing some assets into the family. That's called Derech Eretz. Shemein Derech Eretz in Torah. He can't study Torah without having some sustenance. But nevertheless, Hutzrach, the Mishnah wants to teach us that he's required to be Koveh Itim LeTorah. Set aside a very specific amount of time. Dover cuts. If it has a beginning, it has an end. If it's 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes. If it's an hour, it's an hour. He shouldn't dedicate his day exclusively to Derech Eretz. There's got to be some spiritual time period that's set aside. We're not talking about the quality of his learning, we're not talking about the quantity of his learning, we're talking about the kvius, the fact that it's a set time. Starts here, ends here. And that's what he's dedicated to. He's made that commitment. And the Gemara in Tosus in Sanhedrin asks, the Gemara says, "Ein tchilas dino shalom nidon el al divrei Torah." In other words, it seems like the first question they're going to ask you up in the pearly gates is Torah. How much Torah did you study? In the Gemara in Shabbos, it seems that the first question they're going to ask you is Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, which means were your business dealings honest? And only afterwards, v'achach sholim kavata itim uto. The second question on the line is, did you set aside intervals for time? So how do we reconcile that in Sanhedrin, the first question you can ask you is Divrei Torah, and in the Gemara and Shabbos, the first question they're going to ask you is whether or not you were honest in business. Only afterwards they're going to ask you Kavata Itum and Torah. So Tosus gives the following answer to reconcile this seeming contradiction. Hasam, over there, in the case of Shabbos, the Adam Sha'osek B'Torah Ma'iri. We're talking about a person who is learning Torah. There's no need to ask whether he's learning Torah. He dedicates time to Torah study. So what was the first question they asked him? In the Gemara and Shabbos, El Shlo Kova Itim. He wasn't Kovea Itim. So again, let's go through this again. In the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the first question they're going to ask him is whether he's Kovea Itim. In the Gemara in Shabbos, they're going to ask him whether he was honest in his business dealings, and then they're going to ask him if he's Kovea Itim. Because in the case of someone who's dedicated to his Torah learning, the question that we have to ask him is that X amount of time during the day that he was involved in making money in business dealings, was he honest? But in the case of someone who's already well on the way to dedicate himself to Torah study, is then we're going to ask him, "Va'adam osek b'Torah ma'ari el shlo kava itim b'Torah." In other words, even though he is involved in Torah learning, but he doesn't have set times for learning. You know, sometimes he learns from 9 to 10, sometimes he learns from 12 to 1. Hacha ma'ari shlo osak klal. Hare sha'afim osak b'Torah. You see from Tosus that even someone who's dedicated to Torah, that's not good enough. They're going to still press him and ask him whether he's Kovea Itim. Why? Because his Isuk B'Torah was an hour here, an hour there, sometimes 10, sometimes 12, sometimes 3. It wasn't B'derek Kvius. And that's not sufficient to say that you learned and you studied X number of hours a day, a week, during your lifetime. That's not enough. The question is, were you Kovea Itim? And that's called Asus Yogla Torah. Sheyasel atzmo gedorim liatzmo gedorim b'siyogim l'kviyus itim l'Torah. He's going to have to set up impregnable walls around that time period to protect it, that no one should penetrate into it and undermine his kviyus itim. V'im lo yasaken yeshlo bitulim harbe kenegdo. So it means, Rabosa, I don't know if anyone here is a fan of Daf Yomi. Anybody? If you're into Daf, you are there. So if you're into Daf Yomi, you'll know that the success of Daf Yomi depends totally on Kviyus Itim L'Torah. If you don't have a set time, you're a goner. And the real challenge is if you go on vacation, because then everything goes topsy-turvy, and life is a whole different thing. And sometimes, if you'll find, if a husband and wife go on vacation, the wife thinks that her husband woke up at 8:30 in the morning because that's when we wake up on vacation. Little does she know that her husband snuck out of bed at 6 in the morning because he wanted to do Daf Yom. She finds out in the evening when he falls apart. Why are you so tired? Or if he sings out loud and they're in a small hotel room and she overhears him learning the Daf. But really, it's almost a tie to the sasri, a contradiction in terms, to go out on vacation and yet have kviyus itim l'Torah. Here's where the real challenge is. If you're a working man and you work from 9 to 10, 9 in the morning to 10 at night, and you're deadbeat when you come home and you eat supper and you spend a few minutes with your wife and your children, and then at 11 o'clock somehow you learn a half hour. Okay, but at least it's kavua every night. But once you go on vacation and you think you have all the time in the world, it works just in the opposite way. The Meiri in Avos has a different take on Asus Yogla Tov. He says the following: Hadbilu v'tzimtzimu es divrechem lebal techavdu b'mal hashom. When you teach Torah, you transmit Torah, then you should count your words. Meaning, if you go too long and you don't put a siyag, you don't put a fence around it, then you overburden your audience. It's therefore b'chol dibur v'chol shkim v'divrei Torah. You have to be very careful in all your speech. You should always be curtailing it and counting your words. How much more so in divrei Torah? And therefore, tamid al yedaver adam b'miucha b'torah ki im b'sman aroy b'shir aroy b'makom aroy dvar maruim. Every speech in Torah should be calculated. It should take place in the right place at the right time, and you should be teaching the right things. This is the way Torah has to be transmitted from one to the other. And then we'll finish up. Ube Mishle Orev Omar Chacham Echad Herich Bidvar Yosemitai, that there was a Chacham who was too lengthy, too wordy. Heirule, they said to him, Aduata over Alamido Barichas Kazu, why do you extend the measure and you go overboard? It's not so behashiv, Bihtesh Yavinu Achapsoyim. I really want to make sure that everyone would understand, even those who were dull. Amru lo, you know what? Maybe that's not the right calculation. Even if the dull people understand, Amaskilim, those who caught it the first time around because they're very sharp, Yakutsu bidvarecha, they'll be so sick of what you have to say because you repeat yourself over and over again, they're going to flee and they're going to go out. That's my greatest challenge in learning, because I learn very slowly. That's the way my mind works. So I repeat myself over and over again. So those who are very sharp and they understand on the first round, they can't take it when I go over and over and over again. So usually I have these two guys sitting on my left here. They're not here now, so I can talk about them. They're geniuses, these two fellows. And that's why I can't sleep at night, because they come to my shiur, which is good, because they challenge me, which I like. But I realize when I look, when my eye catches on a little bit towards them, that they caught it already on the first round, and I'm going over it again and again, because I have to make sure I have the cheshbon, I have it all calculated. It takes me a while. Okay, Rabbi, so we'll stop here. If anybody wants a little chumash, we'll start in a few minutes. Something interesting and exciting that I have for you on Parshas Chayisar. Okay then? So let's make a note of where we got up to here. We're up to Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah has a whole other take on Asus Yogah. Okay, so we'll get that next week. And if anybody wants to see the handout for tonight's Chumash class, we'll talk a little bit about husband and wife and Shaduchim, which is really part of Parashas Chayisar.
Should we save the sheets for next week then?
If you don't mind. I mean, if you're afraid you might lose it, give it back to me and I'll give it back. Okay. You know what I mean? What I find is people tell me they're going to bring it next week, and then a week goes by and it never happens.
Do you have old ones?